You're listening to Studio 22.
Welcome to Studio 22. I'm Will Meldman. I'm here with my co-host, Brock O'Hearn.
Woo!
Yeah. More importantly.
More importantly, your cheerleader. Yep.
And we are sitting here today with the legendary Rachel Zalas. Welcome, Rachel.
Thank you
for joining us. We are very excited to have you.
I'm so excited to be here. This is legendary. Not just me, thanks very much, but you guys and the show. Awesome.
We're grateful to have you on. We've wanted to get you on for a while, and we're glad it finally happened. We had to run into you in person to lock you down, even though you were pinning it on us, though. It was a little bit of our fault, I have to say.
Come on, the girls got to play hard to get.
Yeah.
You know how that goes. But we can't start without one thing first. I brought a little something for us to start with. There's got to be a little casa cheers to get the party going.
Wow. This.
Here we go. Little cheers from Casamigos, people.
I'm getting ready to open
Nothing better in the day. I already took the plastic off and everything to get it ready.
There we go.
I couldn't even bring the Reposado because we're sold out. It's now it's going to be a great interview.
That's it. These are one of the best things you guys did as far as you can take these anywhere. I've gone to the beach. I've gone on trips. You pack them everywhere.
They're the best. Yeah. I mean, people are always begging me for these.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have friends who literally will not go out at night without having them in their bag because they're so worried that there's not going to be Casamigos somewhere. I go, by the way, there's Casamigos everywhere.
I was just going
to
say
you don't
really
have to worry about that.
It's harder to not find it than it is to you can get it anywhere.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Do you guys have trouble keeping that in stock, those minis?
It's kind of impossible because we're so out of stock on so much. So the priority is on the bigger bottles. So this has been less of a priority, but we're all begging to get them back. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Do you guys actually sell those? I've never seen them.
Oh yeah.
Oh, you do?
Oh yeah. We sell them at liquor stores, sell them. Oh. And they're in all the hotels and the mini bars and stuff.
You know what I love is I used to stock up on those. And if we ever ran out of costume, it was actual bottle, the big bottle. I'd have a little stash of these hidden into this little cactus I had at my house. Just open it up and start handing out shots to everybody. It's great.
Everyone needs a secret stash.
That's it. Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, to give a little context for the audience, how long have you been with Casamigos and when did you start and all that?
Day one, baby. I mean, if people don't know, your dad is actually one of my best friends for over 20 years.
Absolutely.
And I had never been in the spirits business. I mean, I still don't feel like I'm in the spirits business. I'm in the people and relationship business. But I mean, it all started, we're going on our 10-year anniversary next year. But 2 years prior to that was, in Cabo, George Clooney, Randy Gerber, your dad's property. Everyone has houses there. And everyone's like, why are we drinking such shitty tequila? They're like, why don't we're in Mexico? Let's just make our own. And so I'd say that year was probably one of the funnest years of my life. Just getting drunk with Mike Meldman, your dad, Randy, George Clooney, listening to crazy stories, trying all different taste tests till they finally landed on the first one, which was the Reposado.
Oh, wow.
And then for the next year, everyone was really enjoying it at the house. It wasn't commercial or it was never meant to be sold. And I think that's part of what makes this brand so organic and so popular, in addition to the guys, it really was an organic lifestyle that they just, started because they wanted to drink it themselves. And then after that year, it was like, okay, if you guys are going to produce this much tequila, you actually have to have a commercial license. They were actually drinking more than commercial brands.
Oh, wow.
And then suddenly it was like, oh, let's just ask different friends, put it on their shelves, this and that. And then boom, exploded. Yeah. And it's been a ride ever since then.
Yeah, that authenticity, right? Creating something for you to enjoy with your friends and your family, that basically guarantees that it's going to taste good and be a good product if you're literally formatting it to your own taste and not formatting it to try to sell something.
Right. No, every person coming after that, not every, I mean, there's obviously a lot of great brands, but a lot of people have tried to recreate what happened with Casamigos. Yeah. And it's more obvious that it was created as a business, whereas this was actually guys that were already drinking and wanting something that they would enjoy themselves. And, it set a tone now for every single celebrity and person to want to have their own. The difference, one of the biggest differences I would say is we never tried to sell it to people. We never did ads. We never sold our merchandise. We never put our name on step and repeats. We really made it organic. It's about the cocktails. It's about the lifestyle. It's the story. It's relationships. And no one can recreate that. You know, it's just something that's untangible and magical about this brand, you know, and the people that are involved in it.
That's incredible. I mean, I couldn't speak more to that than the fact that that's how me and Will met. Is I gave up on tequila years before because of some some rough nights.
I've heard that a thousand times. Like people are like, I've had the worst experience, the worm. But, yeah. You know.
No, it was miserable for me, and I just couldn't drink it. And then our mutual friend Max, you know, Max Blank.
He loves the shout out, by the way.
No, he does. That's why I gave it to him. He was just here, you know, so we have to give it to him. We love Max. And he introduced me to Will, and I think I was his plus one, Max's plus one to the party. Not a beautiful girl, you know, he chose me, lucky me. And
you're so pretty, though.
Oh, well, thank you. Likewise.
Thank we you, are
very,
golly.
Very lucky to be sitting across from
you. Some more.
And, but no, so obviously Casamigos party, it's tequila. I was like, I'm just going to bite the bullet. I can't not drink tequila at a tequila party. There's not even going to be anything else. Drank it. Had one of the best nights of my life, and then woke up the next morning with energy, feeling great. No hangover, no anything. I felt amazing. And I was like, I drink tequila now. In fact, I drink only Casamigos now. Yeah. And that's really what happened.
Yeah. I mean, it started a revolution, and people started realizing, you know, it's like no added sugar. It's gluten-free. It's very clean. Like the way they made it, you know, the Casamigos, they really want to take the burn off. Really smooth and so low calorie. So it's like kind of become, it's almost like a health thing.
Yeah, and it's right. An upper, right? So you're having a good time
when you're drinking it. It's the only spirit that's a stimulant, which people don't know. Why do you think we have so much fun, guys?
I think I'm so hyped up for the podcast. That makes total sense. And, you know, it's one of those things with drinking too. It's like if you're going to drink, you might as well be responsible about what you're putting in your body. Right?
Yeah. So. And the funny thing is, like, I never had anything to do with spirits. You know, people are like, oh, you know, did you always work in spirits? I go, no, I was like the editor of Cosmo, of Glamour. I was on TV, on the Today Show, on The View, on CNN, like never. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's not about what the actual job is, about the relationships you develop throughout your life.
Yeah.
And that's what really, you know, was game changer in this brand for all of us. Is it none of us came from a background of, you know, George is an actor and director. Your dad, Mike, is a real estate developer. Randy, you know, operated, you know, ran bars and things like that. But no one was really in the spirit business.
And that's what Randy said as well when we had him on, right? About like, oh, you run a bar, you'll be perfect to run a tequila company. And he's like, well, no, they're two completely different businesses. And right. So like, even though kind of on paper, it seems like it might be similar. It's very different. Yeah.
Yeah. And so for all the years and the different jobs I had, you know, as West Coast editor of Glamour for like 9 years, you know, I developed every relationship in town. So it really came into play, you know, with all of us, you know, like if we want to be at a movie premiere, oh, our friend is running the studio. If we want to be at the, you know, the CAA party, our friends are the head of CAA, you know, and you can just say, hey, is it possible to throw this in your party, do this, that? And that's what makes the difference. You know, it's the friendships, the relationships and things like that. It's not about like if you had experience being in advertising or marketing or spirits, you know.
Totally. And, you know, I feel like when you create a product that tastes good and has a good effect and all that, it's a lot easier to say yes to like those questions or favors or whatever they are, right?
You have to start with a good product to begin with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, speaking about relationships, tell us a little bit about the hottest party of the year that just happened. We just went and Rachel, you absolutely killed it.
Thanks. I mean, obviously it's very famous, the Casamigos Halloween party.
Yep.
And we had been on hiatus for a couple of years because of COVID. So people were really excited to be back.
Yeah.
But including us.
Including you guys. But this party really generates, I mean, we're already at like 12 billion press impressions. I mean, it's unprecedented.
Incredible.
The amount of social, and I think we're almost like half a billion social posts. I mean, it's really crazy, you know, and a lot of it, again, like we were saying, relationships is, you know, someone like Machine Gun Kelly. I met him years ago at a party and we've just been having, you know, a friendship since then. If he has an event, I'll send product for it, send gifts, things, never asking for something in return. And then they show up for the party and him and Megan Fox is Tommy Lee and Pamela Anderson. And
so
it goes
good.
Gangbusters, you know.
They were
Josh DeMille, one of my oldest friends, came as, you know, they kind of did a spoof because the press kind of got after him that he married a much younger woman and he threw on his back the day of the wedding. So he came in the walker with her as Anna Nicole
that's
Smith.
So funny.
You know, Rebel Wilson in the Barbie boxes.
Yep.
I mean, that's the one funny thing about Halloween. It's not as much as who is the talent, but it's also what they dress as.
Yep.
But yeah, it really is like people call it the Vanity Fair of Halloween parties.
Yeah.
And it's just also a great place where it's the perfect mix where you'll find, you know, people that are running studios, supermodels, you know, some of the better, like bigger social influencers, great celebs, you know, so it really has such a sophisticated and fun mix of people. And we keep the list very, very tight. Somehow you guys got in.
I don't know how.
I'm grateful every time.
How long does a party like that take to set up? Because I mean, it looked beautiful.
A long time. I mean, the actual production happens very quickly. But it's, you know, all year long, you're kind of facilitating and making connections and, you know, inviting people to different things, just keeping relationships going. But it's a beast to plan that party because you've got the social media, you've got the press aspects, you've got the production, you've got the list. I probably get at least 3,000 people texting, DMing, emailing. Like even my friends are like, Rachel, we get hundreds of requests.
Oh, yeah.
We can't even imagine like what you get.
Right.
You know? And listen, obviously I wish I could take care of more people, but the only way to keep a party like that is by really keeping it to our friends. Like we don't outreach to people. It's really, Randy invites his friends, Mike invites his friends, George, I invite me, you know, it's not like, yeah. Oh, hey, can you bring so-and-so? Can you get this person to come? And that's what makes it so good.
Well, that's the thing that I felt was pretty funny too, is that even for me, obviously, like I'm not involved with Casamigos outside of being a major fan and friends of you guys. And I was getting hit up left and right to come to the party. And I'm like, I haven't heard anything from you in 6 months. What do you get out of here? You know,
right.
You know, so it's just so funny to me, but at the same time, it truly is one of the best experiences as far as Halloween goes and a party and just the community and the crowd. And my hat is off to you pulling that off because
thanks.
I can't even fathom. I know we went to dinner a few nights before and it was just like, your phone's ringing off the charts, you know, people are calling out of nowhere. And I don't know how you pulled it off, but it is an amazing feat and you kill it.
Thanks, love. It is funny. It does start like at least a month or two in advance where I start getting texts from people like, hey, we should have lunch. What's going on? You should come to this party. And I'm just like, oh God, I see right through it.
Right.
I tend to take care of someone more if they outright say, I'd love to come if there's anything you can do. And then if there's an opportunity and I'm friends with them and I can get them in, I much more respect that than when someone's like trying to like psych me out by pretending they just care about having lunch with me all the time.
Well, there's a certain kind of respect in being straightforward too, you know, there's not everyone gets to do it. Not everyone feels comfortable doing it, but, I found even in business too, some of my favorite people to work with are German and they're very, very straightforward. You know, they just tell it like it is. And if it's not good, it's not good, you know?
Yeah. And like you said, like, I wish, you know, we could like make it a little larger and get more people in too. But like you said, it completely shifts the dynamic of the party and all that, but it's all good.
Yeah. But I think that's a great point. And like, people know that I am kind of direct, you know, I'm a Scorpio. I tell it like it is, but I actually think that's important because I don't want to give people a false idea, not just the party, but in general, like if someone has a request for this, then I'll just be like, that's just not what we do. It's not going to happen. They're like, I really appreciate that you said that, you know, instead of letting me like continue to think for 2 more weeks that there's a possibility, you know?
Yeah, that's good. Cause then they can go make other plans and enjoy the night doing something else. Right.
Yeah.
If not Casamigos, but I have to comment on Miss Casamigos.
It was a good outfit, right?
Costume was amazing.
I never realized how much latex, how popular that is.
Yeah, well, you pulled it off.
It's the lady who makes them for the Kardashians who made mine. It was like the Casamigos teal with the Miss Casamigos sash. Yeah, that was awesome.
We'll throw a picture up.
I know you guys are going to have to show that picture of me strutting the catwalk, the Casa catwalk.
Yeah, absolutely.
It actually took me back to my roots because you guys know I started at Cosmopolitan Magazine.
Yeah.
Way, way, way back in the day. So it made me feel like I was back as a Cosmo girl in a way, from a Cosmo girl to a Casamigos girl. That's a good awesome. Headline actually, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and speaking of like where you started off, I'd love to kind of like go back in time a little bit and like explore that. Like what got you into, you know, the magazine world? Yeah. Cause then obviously you moved to Glamour and then, you know, what advice do you have for people trying to get into that? And what were some of the obstacles, all that?
Right.
And how can we become more fashionable?
We need your help. Look good.
Oh, man. All black never hurts.
I mean, it's really an interesting turn of events that brought me to where I am. So I grew up in a very political family. My mom was senior advisor to Governor Wilson. My parents were very involved in Reagan when he was president, running for president. And so I always thought I was going into politics. And I went to Columbia University and I was at the School of International Affairs. And the first 2 summers, I worked for a political lobby and I worked in DC on the Hill. And it was amazing. And I was dead set that that's what I was doing. And then I was always very like type A overachiever. I don't know if you guys could tell. My junior year, I was like, you know what? It'd be really fun to actually get something like during school year to do have as a job. And literally the day I went into career services, there was an ad that Cosmopolitan Magazine was looking for an intern 2 days a week, a paid internship. And I was like, oh, this could be fun. So I went in, got the job on the spot. And so I thought, okay, for one semester, I'll do my classes 3 days a week and I'll be at Cosmo 2 days a week. Turned into my entire junior and senior year, I worked 2 days a week at Cosmopolitan Magazine. I mean, my friends couldn't believe it. I was like 19 years old working at the, this was in the 80s. God, I'm really going to age myself, but no one could believe it. I was like 19 years old and I'm working at the top magazine in the world. I mean, this was literally the most famous magazine. Wow. And the editor at the time was this woman, Helen Curley Brown. And it was really funny because I had no idea what I was getting myself into. I thought it was going to be all young girls. It was all about sex, the magazine, and being single. And I walk into the office and it's like all like 50, 60-year-old women as editors. And I found out that like Helen kind of was insular. You know, she was such an unbelievable editor, but kind of liked to keep it her group as the editors there. And the first week I was there, I get a call. Miss Curley Brown would like to see you in her office. I'm like, oh, what did I do? I screwed up. I did something, you know? And I was like, oh my God, oh my God. I go in her office and her whole office is like pink and leopard print and, you know, all sorts of stuff. And I sit down on her couch and she looks at me and she goes, you know, I really was excited to have you come in. You know, we wanted to have someone who's still in college come in. She goes, because we don't have that many young single girls here. And I'd really like to know more about what's going on in the like Sex in the City girls' life. And she goes, so like how many orgasms do you have a week? Just in your going, oh my God. Oh my God. Is she really asking me this? You know?
Wow.
And I was like, and at the time I was still a virgin. So wow. It was kind of funny. But anyway, she and I developed this incredible bond. She became my mentor and I would get these notes sent to me at my desk, this big pink notepad with pink markers saying, dear Pussycat, thank you so much for all your input on sex and girls and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And she would send me like leopard negligees and I became like teacher's pet. Wow. And I ended up after I graduated getting offered a full-time job and it completely changed the trajectory of my life. You know, suddenly I'm lobbying Congress, you know, in DC on the Hill to like writing, doing Bachelor of the Month column at Cosmopolitan Magazine, you know, so it was such a crazy turn of events, you know, and that's what started me in magazines. And it was incredible. I had such an incredible, like, I think it was another 5 years that I was there before I went on to work in television. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that initiative of still in school, taking the internship, and then, like you said, sticking with it for 2 years, and then seeing where it leads.
Right.
And then that's how you figure out what you like and what you can do, and that's awesome.
I mentor a lot of young girls, and my number one thing is you need to start working when you're in college. You know, it's so competitive these days, and you've got to start getting your foot in the door. It's actually kind of funny because I almost wouldn't have gotten hired full time because I had started in college. I got hired right away and didn't have to go through any more interviews or things. And my first desk that I was on there was the executive editor. And she was like, I need you to type blah, blah, blah. And this is how I type. Like, that's even today. And she looks at me, she goes, how did you get this job? So back in those days, you had to have a typing test, which I never knew took a typing classes. So had I not started in college and sailed through, I would never have gotten the full-time job because I did not know how to type. It's kind of crazy that was a prerequisite to get a job there, was typing.
Well, right. It makes sense with, you know, editing and writing columns and doing the whole thing. So
yeah,
that's pretty incredible.
Yeah, so it was amazing. So, but I definitely tell, and the other thing I tell people is I never stayed at one job for too long. And I really think it's hard to move to higher spots and get more money and things like that unless you switch. Because the more you stay in one place, you don't have much leverage, you know?
Right.
You need to be able to say, I'm going to walk away. Give me this or I'm going to walk away. And that's the only way that you get that. And by moving to TV, you know, I tripled my, you know, I was making $19,000 a year. I mean, it was crazy. I had the biggest, one of the biggest jobs in the world at the biggest magazines, you know, and it took like moving to be a producer in television to suddenly get like quadruple what I was making, you know, and that's the only way.
Yeah. I've heard that a lot with friends, especially in the corporate world too, that, you know, they'll get a job and you can't move forward too much, but another company will hire them even for the same position for more money. Right. And it's kind of leveraging that and getting to where you want to go. But that's pretty awesome that you took a chance and said like, I'm going to give this thing a shot, and it changed the whole trajectory of your life. And now you're, you know, one of my favorite people in the world. We would have never met if you never did that.
I
right?
know. So, well, you never know.
True.
Kismet. That's like true. We still might've met somehow.
That's true. Actually.
And yeah. And I love that advice as well, because if you're working somewhere too long, people can like get comfortable with you and like get used to like, okay, you know, they'll take care of that or no. But then if you apply somewhere else, you have Cosmo on your resume, and then you can definitely use that to like up whatever position you're at to like, I love that.
Yeah. Also for myself, like I never want to feel comfortable. You know, I think that's when you stop feeling stimulated and having the energy and really being kick ass at what you're doing. So I always felt important to me to always move to something where once I felt like, oh, I can just do this job blindfolded, hands behind, then it's time to move on. Wow. Unless I'm having new responsibilities at that place.
Absolutely.
Sometimes, you know, there's a cap at some places is how far you can go. And that's when it's time to like push yourself. You know, I think too many people sit in that comfort zone, and that's where you get lost.
There's no growth.
No growth. That's, you know, spiritually, financially, you know,
academically.
Yeah, in so many ways. And, you know, moving to TV opened up my life in so many different ways. You know, I ended up working at Fox for 4 years. I got to do entertainment and sports and news. Being behind the scenes as a producer helped me so much later in life when I was actually an on-air correspondent. Because when you know the different elements of a production, you're much better on air.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
You know, and suddenly when I was starting at Glamour, they really wanted me to be their on-air person as well. And when I left there, I became full-time on air, you know, like as a correspondent for Today Show, Good Morning America, The View. I was a panelist on Chelsea Handler. I was a talking head on CNN, and I was able to do live TV, tape TV, you know, talking to cameras, you know, all sorts of stuff because I had so many years in production and I dealt with so many different egos and talent from the different shows I was producing that it really gives you all that background. So I think it's super important that people are really knowledgeable in all aspects of the business, that they're in other businesses.
I would say that without a doubt, because my first role I ever got in acting, I had no experience. And I was so nervous. I couldn't get words out until I had a conversation with my fellow actress. And she took me inside. She's like, you just got to stop caring. Stop caring what everyone thinks. And then after that, I've chatted a few directors. I learned a little more about production, you know, all of the ins and outs of what it takes to actually create a film. And you're like, my job is so small in comparison to what it takes to pull everything off, right?
Yeah.
And then it makes you feel more confident and more comfortable in your space because you're like, oh, the director's not even, he's not thinking about me. He's thinking about 10 shots ahead or like the changing the, you know, third camera to this position or whatever. He's not thinking about me. I'm not, stop getting in my head. And it opened up my doors even in my own personal life too, to be, you know, more confident in the way I show up. And that's like you were saying, it's one of my favorite things about acting is it's always a different challenge, a different role. And it really opens up never being comfortable I'm the most confident guy in the world walking down the street. I'm confident in myself, my physicality, the way I show up, how I, you know, speak, everything. I mean, that was not a good example of speaking, but when I get behind into a character, there's a different element there of just like, this is a challenge that it's the only thing that makes me nervous anymore. And I love it because it's exciting. You know, did you feel completely natural the second you went on camera? Was that when it was just, that was it for you? You knew?
Yeah. I mean, listen, some of that is also my personality.
Yeah.
But the confidence of knowing all the behind the scenes and me working with other talent saying, this is how you do a soundbite. This is how, you know, it definitely all helps. I think that also really helped me with like understanding how talent works too. Sometimes, you know, people think, oh, the biggest talent are going to be the biggest divas. And it was the opposite. Like you realize some of the biggest stars in the world, I'd get the C-list person from the CW show saying, oh, they're not going to get on the phone with you for a pre-interview. I go, seriously, I just got off the phone with Harrison Ford. You know what I'm saying? Like there's a reason that people are this successful in the business because they're professional. They know what they need to do. And like Pamela Anderson, I'm going to give you an example. When I was producing, I was a producer at Keenan Ivory Wayans talk show. And the way these talk shows work is, you know, celebrities don't just go on and suddenly there's banter and stories, you know, it's all pre-produced. So like I would have to do a phone call with whatever celebrity was coming on and spend an hour like you guys are with me. But then I would distill it into like the five best stories that they can tell, you know, this and that. And so I remember I was doing a call with Pamela Anderson and I was like, oh God. And she gets on the phone and the whole thing was like, oh my gosh, me and Tommy, we had sex on this and there was the corner. And I got a phone going, oh my gosh, she's never going to say any of this on air. Like, this is crazy. Like I had to go into her green room right before the show and be like, do you remember you said this? These are the stories. The second I walk in, I was like, so Pam, she goes, I know. Sex on the corner, the this, the, like, oh, wow. So professional. You know what I'm saying? Like, so it's unexpected sometimes, but the people that are really professional know exactly what they're doing, what they need to say. They show up on time. They're lovely, you know? And so it's like, you learn a lot in those situations.
Kind of goes back to what you're saying about relationships, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's a relationship-based business and most of them are, and it really pays it forward when you're a good person, I guess, you know?
Yeah. The funniest was like, I was also a producer on Magic Johnson's talk show. Loveliest, nicest guy in the world, but was not necessarily meant to have a show. And I don't know if you guys were, I don't know what age you were at this time, but Howard Stern would every day replay the entire show and like make fun of all the different things. Wow. And then he finally agreed, like it was sort of like the end, it only lasted a few months. And he finally was like, I'm going to come on that show, but I need like the Miss Playmate of the year, that this person, that. And I'm just sitting here going, oh my God, is this what I've come to? But it was like a lot of fun, you know, it wasn't necessarily the best show, but you have to take from everything you do, whatever you can out of it. You know, that we just had a lot of fun and I built a lot of great friendships on that set. So it's always finding the good in anything.
And one of my favorite examples of all this too is like on Ocean's 13, when I was a PA, not really doing anything, but just there and observing and helping where I could, George would play basketball with the crew every day at lunch. Mm-hmm. And like that set the tone for every other actor there. Because if the biggest guy there is that personable and you know, making everyone feel that comfortable, then what are they going to do to like, you know, raise hell or do whatever? So like, it also sets an example for other people, right? Like in a team building kind of way. But yeah, that's like, I don't know, that's amazing.
Yeah, I've had a lot of fun, different jobs.
Yeah.
You know, I produced this show for VH1 called The List, where I did the reunion of Spinal Tap.
Oh my God.
You know what I'm saying? It's like there's so many different like crazy experiences and people. And again, that's about like moving around, trying different things, you know, learning from different experiences. Yeah, and then after that, I took the job at Glamour as being the West Coast editor. And so went back to my magazine roots, which was a whole
full circle.
Yeah.
Was it a different experience at the magazine being the editor for the, like, obviously it's a different position, but did you find the industry was similar to when you were the intern at Cosmo?
Well, Cosmo, I was an intern, but then I was an editor after I graduated. But I was doing more articles and like relationship stuff. You know, when I came out to back to LA to be the West Coast editor of Glamour, it was obviously a lot more, you know, celebrity covers, power women in Hollywood, which I really loved because I loved putting a spotlight on women doing incredible things. Actually, when I was at Cosmo, one of the stories I did was I did a feature on like six girls in their 20s who I found inspirational. And so it was kind of great to do to take that and be able to spend the next 8 years or however long I was at Glamour really focusing a lot on that.
That's cool.
Was really cool because, you know, celebrities are great, but there are a lot of real people to me who are the real stars, you know, and women changing the world. And so every year we would do this thing called Glamour Women of the Year Awards. And we would celebrate women all around the world who were like mind blowing, you know, putting themselves in crazy situations to say, rescue women here, do this and that. And like the celebrities would come and like have shivers and be like,
wow,
oh my God, I feel so lucky to be in there. You know, so it's nice to have things where it puts things in perspective, you know.
I grew up with a single mother and I would say hands down that women are the most powerful and important things we have on earth, hands down.
Well, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. You're one of them. Absolutely. Yeah. So, but that's incredible. I'm kind of curious as somebody who knows so many people, so many celebrities.
Yeah.
Is there ever a moment where you still have gotten starstruck or has that been, you know, hasn't happened in a while or does it still happen to this day maybe?
Oh my God. I have the best story actually.
Yeah.
So I don't get starstruck at all. I mean, I've been around celebrities a long time. A lot of them are my friends. I don't really, there's one that might like growing up, like die. Okay. And so one day I'm with your dad and we're going to a party in Malibu. And on the way he goes, oh, we just have to stop quickly to see Randy at Cafe Habana. And I was like, oh, cause like I was like dying to go to this other party. He's like, just come on. We have to go by. Randy's having a little thing on the patio. I was like, fine. So we get out at Cafe Havana. We walk in. There's only maybe like 20 people. And singing karaoke is Bono.
Wow.
I literally, growing up, would sit in my car with my friends singing like, Sunday, buddy. So, like I died. He's like the one person for me that was everything, you know, like the only concerts I would go to religiously and stuff. And I walk in and there's like Bono literally just, you know, singing to me is what I felt. And then later, like after he's done singing, he comes over to me and he, you know, he always has his glasses on and he pulls them down. And he goes, you're very pretty. I literally was like, I died. I look at your dad, I go, I'm done. Like nothing ever has to happen again in my life. Bono told me I'm pretty.
Wow. That is so cool.
I was like, life is great. Smoke a cigarette. Like I'm good. Yeah. I'd say that was the only time, like I literally didn't know what to do with myself. I think I talked about it for a full year. Anyone who could listen, Bono told me I'm pretty. Bono told me I'm pretty. Like I was so excited. Yeah.
That's incredible.
That was great.
I had a feeling it was going to be a musician for some reason. I don't know why.
Yeah.
That's great.
But yeah, so like, for me also, I wanted to add, I think we touched on this before about like what takes you through from one place to the next. And I think for me, it's not what job, it's about storytelling. Every job I've been in, it's how to tell the story. And I think like people need to figure out in their head, like what's the story of their life, you know, and how are they going to continue that? But always upping the journey. That's what's been so fun, you know?
I love that.
I've had the most random jobs growing up and each one of them in one way or another has paid homage to how I show up today, you know, and the friendships I have, the relationships I have. Like one of my friend's dads told me very early on, he said, whatever you do in business, be honest and tell the truth and don't, you know, screw anyone over. It'll always come back to you one way or another. And I saw friends who went down a different path of, you know, doing shady stuff, maybe not being good, lying to people, saying they had things they didn't and offering things they didn't have. And it always came back and bit them in the butt, you know, and me showing up. And I've been on so many sets now that I'm so grateful for is you see that one person that just is miserable or is having a terrible time and it ruins everyone else's experience. And I'm like, I feel so lucky. I can't imagine like being in that position. Obviously we all have bad days and it doesn't always go the way we want, but we're so lucky to do what we do. We're so lucky to wake up every morning, and it's obviously not always going to be easy, but at the end of the day, I don't want to be the reason that someone else had a crappy experience, because I've been on sets where the director, who I'm not going to name, has ruined.
But who?
Yeah, but it's ruined the experience for the other people, whether it was a DP or an actor or whatever. And they're like, I'm never going to work in this industry again. And I'm like, that sucks, because this is one of the best things you can do. At least I think, you know, and obviously we have all of our own career paths and choices and everything, but just being a good person and having fun. And I always say I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be when I'm supposed to be there. I like to believe that anyways, regardless if it's a good moment or a bad moment, there's always lessons to be learned. And I'm just trying to have fun, you know, enjoy my life and be a little gypsy and you know, do my
thing. Don't you play one on TV?
Sometimes.
I think like one of the hardest things about a film set or a TV show or any type of set where you're, you know, filming like live video and audio is they are very stressful environments, and you're on the clock because time is money and you have to get a certain amount done each day, and you work long hours and you're around a lot of people and there's a lot of collaboration. And I think the people that help you ease your stress, because you're going to be stressed. It's not an if, it's like you are.
Yeah.
And the people that help you bring that stress down, you remember more and really help you. That's like what you're kind of talking about, right? Is like,
yeah,
you notice, do they make life harder? Do they make life easier? And like, as a PA, you're at the bottom of the totem pole. And my only mission was to just not make anyone's life harder. And I would try to do everything the best I could to my ability. You know, if you have questions, ask. But like, and that's what you do on a set. Like I know from firsthand experience, like you're so nice to everybody. You know, no, even if it's 4 a.m. and we're filming at night, you try to be as bright as possible, right? And so what is your experience with that like? Like, do you find that the people are, you know, you remember the people more that are kind of ease the stress?
Well,
in a sense,
Rachel is the light. She's the one.
She is the light.
I mean, first of all, there's absolutely no room for anything but kindness and respect for anybody who's working on a set. What's been difficult sometimes is there are different rules for men versus women. Granted, I did come up in a different era where the balance was very different. It has changed a bit as women have taken on more and more leading roles as CMOs, CEOs, you know, bigger jobs in companies. But it has been a battle, like throughout my career, to have the same things attributed to what a man can get away with and a woman when you're dealing with business and people working for you, sensitivities. But I'm glad that it's something that's evolving.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, if you've gotten to see it in such a different light and how it is today, is like, how does that feel? Does it give you more hope that it's going to be even more equal moving forward? And
yeah, I have a lot of hope. And I really try to any young woman who's working at any job that I've ever been at, I've tried to be there to give advice, to push them to really, you know, move ahead in their careers. I've also really pushed them to like the younger generation has come up in a very different way. Social media has put a big wrench in the way people behave at work. You know, the ADD, the idea that like the job is only from 9 to 5, you know, very different. When I came up, I worked from 5 in the morning to midnight, my entire 20s. You know, that was just how it was.
Yeah.
You can't do that anymore. You know, when I first started at Casamigos, I was like, okay, we're going to work nights, we're going to work weekends. And they're like, Rachel, you can't just tell people. Like, what do you mean? there's different rules about that. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, that was never when I was coming up, you know. And it's also, you really do have to be a lot more thoughtful about the way you're behaving, because everything now, I came up in the 90s, there was no social media.
Yeah.
You could do whatever you want. It's, the landscape has changed a lot. But also, you know, it left more room for us. We read newspapers and books and, you know, that changed a lot. So it's so important for me. I'm a bit of a stickler with anyone who's working with me. Details, you know, they think if they get like the big stuff done, then they're coasting, you know, and it's just like the big stuff doesn't matter if at the end of the day you misspell the person's name.
Yeah.
You know, And so that to me, I am actually very particular about. I'm also particular about don't just know your own business. You know, it's not okay to just read, if you're working with me, Deadline and Variety and, you know, entertainment publications. You need to know the world. Read New York Times, LA Times, whatever you can get your hands on. Like, I need to know that, you know, you're going to be able to have a conversation with anybody. Like, you need to be a well-rounded person, not just good at, like, whatever yeah. you're doing. So I think there's some things that have gotten a little bit lost today with all the other stuff and all the other noise. But at the end of the day, it's like the discipline, the hours, the work ethic, the details, you know, knowledge about the world is so important. And I think that's really what's going to help more people get ahead. And I'm just really heartened to see, you know, how many women are getting bigger jobs. They're CMOs and CEOs. Now, when you go to, you know, my sister made a lot of money. She was one of the biggest, like owned one of the biggest companies that she started, which was like a digital marketing. She was one of the first people to take testing online of like wow. movie trailers and stuff.
Oh, wow.
And her partner is Bob Pittman.
Okay. Who's,
yeah. And it turned into a massive company. But she felt like when she was going to all these, you know, things around the world where there were speakers and panelists, there were no women. And she felt very isolated. Mm. So when she sold her company, she took all that money and started something called the Female Quotient. She's developed these lounges at all these events around the world. She was the first all-female group, you know, invited to all these different conferences, Davos. You know, they'd never wow. had these kind of things, Cannes Lions. And so it's like very important that women, you know, stick together and really show that they're supporting each other. And that's a huge part of it.
Absolutely. And I, man, I love, I mean, there's a lot there, right? There's a lot.
Yeah, that was a lot to unpack.
No,
you should actually have my sister on. She's like one of the single most impressive, and she's really moving the needle for like women around the world. And she's not only doing it for women, you know, who are in the United States working, but for women in different countries mm-hmm. around the world, college campuses. You know, I actually found, I know this is might be a little controversial, but some of the more antagonistic experience I've had is with female bosses. Hmm. But that was because so many years ago, there were so few women, jobs for women, you know, in the upper echelon. So it was so competitive.
Right.
Men, it was like, who cares? Move up. Like, they didn't care. They were all the top spots.
Wow. Right.
And so now you're seeing that women are really being a lot more supportive as there's more opportunities opening for them. And it's so important that those opportunities open. And so it's kind of like this circle, cycle yeah. that needs to happen amongst women, amongst men. So it's been fun to watch how it's all evolved since I started in the 80s.
I mean, not to like get super deep and spiritual, but like Eckhart Tolle has this chapter on kind of female energy and like women in history and how, I mean, all you have to do is go back 50, 60 years to like the beginning of time, and it's men.
60 years?
Well, to get like really contrasting examples. I mean, obviously it's a spectrum and it still happens today. So you don't have to go back at all, really.
Right.
But in terms of all of human history, men mistreating women. I mean, literally like, from the Salem witch trials, which is like a smaller niche example, but horrifying, to the Spanish Inquisition, to anything, to like not being able to vote, work. It, like that was recent stuff in the course of human history. But what Eckhart says is it's completely shifting, right? The energy is shifting. And by the end of like this entire transformation, women, it's going to be realized because it's true. Like women are going to be literally the ones in charge, and you can feel it, you can sense it, and it's happening. And like, that's something I firmly believe. Like women are life givers. They're more in touch with nature. They're better at raising children. Like, and that, like, call me sexist if you want for saying that, but it's true. Like they're just better at it. I think it's an extreme compliment. Like, it's a very big feat to raise a child. It's hard. It's demanding. You have to be patient and caring, and women are better at that. And so it's great to hear these specific examples of that. But I think overall the shift is happening, and it's just, you know, a matter of time.
Yeah. But we're great multitaskers.
Oh yeah.
But it's hard. I mean, you know, for men, there's not a lot that men have to do. you know, you can be successful in your job. You know, women have a lot to do, you know, in terms of, you know, the beauty standards and having a successful career and raising the family. You know, it's a lot that is on women, you know, and sometimes like I didn't get married or have kids, you know, and that definitely opened up a lot of room for me to really be aggressive and go after what I'm doing and spend all my time on that because I didn't really have other responsibilities.
Right.
But for most women, you know, there's a lot of other things, you know, that they have to do. I mean, I was the original Sex and the City girl. Come on. Everyone always says that they're like, Sarah Jessica Parker stole your vibe, baby. I'm like, I know, but my book is going to be way better than that one.
Hell yeah.
Well, when you release that book, we'll have you on the podcast and we need signed copies. So
yeah. No, but it is like a crazy, you know. But there's one other thing about me that's kind of a funny thing that people are always like, no way, no way, is that in my entire life, no matter where I'm going, how long I'm going, I never check bags. So I think it's sort of the reflection of my life. Like I need to always feel like I'm not wasting time. I'm nimble. Once I get there, I can be off to my thing. I'm not waiting for bags. And, you know, and I think it's sort of like how my life has gone, you know.
See, you're lucky though, because I try to only bring my carry-on in a backpack, but one pair of my shoes takes up my whole carry-on. So I can't fit more than one outfit in it. So it's kind of a little bit more difficult, but
that's true. I guess it helps that I'm like a size zero whatever, but still, come on guys, beauty products, hair products, shoes, outfits. Come on.
The last time I was at the airport, I was waiting for a bag. Funny enough, I had to check it. And this guy was standing next to me and we were just hitting it off. And he was with his wife. They just got in town from like Cabo or something like that. And, he's like, we went for 2 days and she has 7 bags.
Yeah.
And she wouldn't just carry it on. I was like, we have clothes at our other house. We've got all her stuff, but she just wanted to bring it. And he's like, well, that's what I signed up for, right? You know?
Yeah.
So it's impressive that that's all you travel with.
No, my friends know. I'm like, if we're taking a trip together, it's carry on only. They hate me, but whatever.
Yeah. No, it's the best way to do it though, because you can just get on and off and go straight on your way. And
yeah.
I can't tell you how many times I've gotten my bags lost, so I'm also not a fan of that too.
Yeah.
As someone who's done so many different careers and you said that, you know, you never want to be comfortable, is there anything that you still want to do that you haven't done yet?
What do I still want to do? Retire to an island, live large.
We have similar goals, by the way.
I have to say, I left the politics behind, but it is still something I've always been really engaged in. And I do a lot behind the scenes for different things. Who knows? You know, it was funny during COVID, I rewatched all of The West Wing.
Yeah.
And it just like, I got the bug again. I was like, oh, politics, the hell, you know, so many men. I was like, who knows? This could be something that go back to. I don't know if I want to do it in the current state of what's happening, but it is something that I've secretly always loved. So who knows where I end up? Like one of my favorite pictures when I got a private tour of the White House when I was younger, and I have a picture of me like at the podium as if I'm the like press secretary, you know, CJ from the West Wing. And I still look at that picture sometimes and think, oh, sliding doors. Like, what would my life be? Like, don't you guys ever think about what different route your life could have taken? It's like so strange to me thinking of where I would be right now had I continued that instead of like taking the internship at Cosmo.
Yeah.
It's crazy you said that because this morning I never really think about, I'm like very goal driven. And like, if I'm like working on something, I'm just like, okay, build that, like, keep going. Like, you know, one lane tunnel vision. But like, I literally had the thought, if I didn't go to USC and like went somewhere else, what would my life be like? And it's trippy. It's very trippy to think about. You know, definitely very lucky to go there and study film, which I've loved my entire life and have worked in my entire life. But it's like a total hypothetical, but I love it because your mind like can just spin for hours thinking about it. Cause like there are other things that I'm interested in, but nothing I've been that committed to.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the best things about being a human too, though, is that, you know, animals, for example, have their environment and they can't really leave their environment. A fish can't leave the water. You know, a deer doesn't really leave the woods and everything. But humans, we can travel anywhere. We can do anything. We can live anywhere, you know. And it's fascinating that I think at any point, if we decided, like, if I wanted to go be a monk, I could probably pack up tomorrow or tonight and take off and go dedicate my life to that. But it's not what I want to do, so...
You as a monk.
I was the first.
Thank God you didn't do that. No,
was gonna shave
who's
the head?
Swing me around? Yeah, God. No,
I won't choose that path. But yeah, there's limitless possibilities. And I think there's enough for everyone to go around too. So like you're saying with the women in business too, you know, there's so many new emerging jobs and companies and ideas people are creating. And there's enough for everyone, you know. So it's exciting to see what's going to happen next. But we're going to root you on no matter where you go. Thanks. That's for sure.
Well, you also never know who comes back into your life from sure. different places. Like in the 90s, when I was producing this show at FX, it was called Breakfast Time. And it was based on this British show that was like the hottest show in England. And it was a shot in the round. So even if you're a producer or whatever, you're all on camera. And we shot in this 6,500 square foot apartment. And we had a ballroom and a bedroom and a living room and a kitchen. And we used to do segments like, so this was my first job after Cosmo. I left to go be a producer on this show. And it was such a blast because I spent 4 years in the most creative experience of my life. It launched FX, the network. Wow. That was the first, you know, and I was doing producing three different shows. That's why I was working from 5 a.m. till midnight, because the first show I had to be there at 5 and I didn't leave until midnight. And it was one of the most creative experiences in my life. We would do like interactive segments and the, you know, celebrities in bed doing the interview and, you know, celebrities in the kitchen. I mean, it was just a really fun experience. And then years later, a lot of the talent from that show popped up again. You know, I had left and it wasn't until like years and years later, Tom Bergeron was the host. Yeah. He's now Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah.
Jeff Probst was a talent who's Survivor. Phil Kogan was one of the talent, and he's Amazing Race. You know, so there's wow. like so many people that I met, and it was just like, oh, some, you know, cable, FX, you know, who are all like important people in my life right now and had a big inspiration in the way like I learned, you know, to be really, you know, on the fly, because you had to, you know, it was all live television.
Yeah.
And Tom Bergeron taught me a great lesson, because I was like, Tom, but what if, because I would have to really be creative and plan like what's something really fun we can do with this celebrity to push it out. And I go, what if it doesn't work? And Tom was like, Rachel, if it doesn't work, tomorrow's a new day. He's like, what's the worst that can happen that you pushed your level of creativity? And so like, I definitely have taken, and all the talent, I'd say Jeff and Phil, they all were that way. Like this was such an experience in terms of like how to just like go for it. You know, and I think not enough people go for it. You know, what's the worst can happen is you know, is in work, in relationships, and, you know, like, you know, I have so many girlfriends that stress, but like, what if the guy this and what if the guy is like, you can't possibly know. Go for it. Right. If it doesn't, if he breaks your heart's broken. Like, you know, it's not like you don't come back. You know, we're Phoenix. We rise, you know, and it's just like, so like so many different things, so many different experiences, and people from past experiences come back as really close friends of mine that I never would have thought, you know. Jeff Probst, you know, was at the Halloween party.
Oh, yeah.
Tom Bergeron, you know, when someone invited me to Dance with the Stars and he's hosting it, I'm like, Tom, you know, it's great. So like cool. Work every relationship you have everywhere you go. You know, I was just in the Malibu office and someone walked by and they're like, I think that was Chelsea Handler. And I was like, I was a panelist on her talk show. I ran it. I'm like, Chelsea, you know, it's like, just like, you have to always keep people in your life, you know, keep relationships going. I really make an effort. You know, a lot of people just let things go. You know, to send a text, you know, how you doing? Anything, even the littlest things
remember
make a difference.
Yeah. I love that. So speaking of the future, you know, what's the future for Casamigos? Anything you can share or what's your future?
Wow, we have something really big coming up next year. I can't share what it is, but people are going to be blown away.
Well, that's something,
something
to look
very
forward to.
Exciting. Yeah. So this is the tease, you guys.
Okay.
All right. That's all I can give.
Hey, that's good. That's great.
But I mean, next year is big. It's our 10-year anniversary, which I still can't believe. Wow. Can you guys believe it's been 10 years next year? I mean, honestly, it feels like yesterday.
Yeah.
It has been the ride of a lifetime. The most wild experience. Like, who knew that this would explode, create such a revolution, make so many people happy in the world. Yeah. make people happy. What I feel like, I'm like the peacemaker in the world. I make people one shot at a time, you know? But yeah, it's just been the most incredible to be a part of something. You know, every other job, you know, obviously some jobs I started from the beginning, but this has been the single most explosive, you know, the thing that I've ever been a part of, and to be there from day one, to watch it grow and evolve and still to this day have as much of an incredible reputation, not even more so. And as we grow it around the world, I mean, we're now in so many countries around the world, you know, and it's fun to go other places and have them recognize the brand, and without ever doing any actual advertising or step in repeats or selling the merchandise.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of a really, really unique story in that way.
Well, I just noticed the nail polish, by the way.
Yeah. Hello, Casatio. I'm very dedicated to the brand. This was part of my costume too, but I actually wear this nail polish all the time.
That's great.
I might be working on something like this too, just FYI.
Oh, it goes great with your hair. It's perfect.
Thanks.
That's awesome. Well, since we have you here, are me and Will invited next year to the party?
Oh, you guys are so in. Always.
We have it here on camera. Woo! Guys.
We approve.
Rachel.
I know. We need to think of something really cool and special for the 10 year next year.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Oh, I didn't think.
Well. Well, if we come up with anything, we'll let you know.
Okay, you guys work on that. Get back to
me. We got you. Rachel, it's a pleasure. We love you. You're incredible.
Love you guys.
And thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. Shot.
Another shot
to close this segment.
I'm going to work out right after this.
Cheers, boys.
Cheers.
Thanks for tuning in to Studio 22.